Redistricting and Public Affairs will come to order. Good afternoon, committee, and good afternoon, audience. Glad you're here. We are going to open our redistricting testimony here in just a moment. Kara will have an announcement. So at this point, we will open public testimony on redistricting. And Kara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. At your place is a new calendar for our meeting schedule. You'll notice in blue are the meetings we've either changed or added. If you could talk to our staff and let them know that we've got some more meeting commitments coming up, that would be great. Also, the penalty meeting, there's 3 o'clock on there. It might be a different time, so we'll let you know as soon as the arrangements are made. There's also a new mailing list that we've sent out to interested parties for the record. And on the orange sheet is the meeting announcement for the Eugene meeting. If you can get us, I don't know what the deadline is, soon would be great.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll now move into public testimony on redistricting. And on our sign-up sheet, and that's how we're operating here, we are going to call on Al Davidson, Annette Newingham, Association of Clerks, and also Bill, and I'm not sure what your last name is, from U.S. Postal Service. Okay, yeah, this is redistricting. Okay, sounds good. All right, Al Davidson and Annette Newingham, please. You're on redistricting? Yes.
No,
please.
No.
Oh, you're not? all of you are on that. Okay.
County
four. All right. Very good. Okay, anyone from the public wish to testify on redistricting? That's our practice every Wednesday. We like to devote the first half hour of the program to that, and this is your opportunity. All right, no one here to do that, then we will close public testimony on redistricting.
I'm disappointed, Mr. Chair. I thought we had a lineup.
I was excited. I thought we had business. Okay. We'll now open a public hearing on SCR 7, please. Kara?
Mr. Chair, members, Jack Zimmerman, the bill requester, couldn't be here, but he submitted some written testimony in support of this resolution for Lolita Geese. There's also a dash one amendment. There were some errors in the dates and names of her family members, so that's what those are. We apologize for not being here. I don't know if anyone else is here for Lolita. No. Okay. That's it.
Okay. Okay, well, that will end the public testimony portion of this. And let's move into a work session on SCR 7.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mark.
I'd like to move the dash one amendments to SCR 7.
Representative March moves the dash one amendments to SCR 7. Do we have discussion? Any objections? That motion carries.
I'd like to follow up, Mr. Chair. I move that we pass Senate Concurrent Resolution 7 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative March moves SCR 7 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. And do we have discussion? And Jennifer, if you'd call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative
Berger?
Aye.
Representative
Walker?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. Motion carries, and we will designate Representative Winters as the carrier. Representative Jackie Winters. And we'll close the work session on SCR 7. We will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2674. And members, you have amendments at your place right now which will essentially replace the bill. What you have here is an amendment that, if adopted, will replace the original bill and will set up a mechanism that will ultimately allow for a challenge of term limits on the multiple subject rule. I knew we'd draw some attention on this. I'd like you to take a look at the... Pardon me? Yes, thank you. I'd like you to take a look at that for a moment. All right, do we have any discussion from the committee at this point? I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2674, and I will move into a work session on House Bill 2674. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2674.
Thank you. Representative Devlin moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2674. Do we have discussion?
I'd like to know how this works. I'd like to, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Stark.
I'd like to know how this would work.
I'll give you the short read on how it will work. As you follow through, it is going to allow someone to file for office in an expedited fashion. As you can see, it moves the declaration of candidacy filed from 250th, that's not sooner than the 250th day, to the 415th day. When that is exactly, I can't tell you. I don't have a date for that, a date certain.
Pardon me?
It's soon.
It is soon. Okay. So this is going to allow someone to file for office rather rapidly here. And what this is going to do is let them do that. Then it is going to go before the Secretary of State as to whether they will accept or reject. If they reject, this immediately sets the process in place where it is challenged in the Marion County Circuit Court. It initially expedites past the appeals process and goes directly to the Supreme Court. So it allows a challenge quickly, expeditiously, and that is essentially, in a nutshell, how it works, minus a few details there.
Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Okay, we do have a motion that the dash ones be moved, and any further discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, move the bill to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Devlin moves House Bill 2674 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note for the public that this special provision will expire as of January 1, 2003, so it will not be in effect in the future.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right, Jennifer, if you'd call the roll.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Marr?
Aye.
Representative Marr?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. Motion carries. Anybody choose to be a carrier there? Not, I shall. Okay. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2674. All right, I will open a public hearing on, or pardon me, a work session on House Bill 2587. Apologize for saying. I will close the work session on House Bill 2587, and now I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3694, and Representative Merkley.
Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the chance to testify on this bill. This is one half of two interconnected bills, and for the record, I'm Jeff Merkley from East Portland. These, the two halves are 3694 and 3695, and I'll keep my comments fairly brief. The question that led to these bills was is it possible to facilitate the sale of a manufactured housing park to the tenants or to a nonprofit that is essentially representing the tenants? This type of sale has been contemplated in the past, but it's something extremely difficult to pull off. These bills create a framework. Both of them I filed on behalf of the Attorney General's task force, and they came out of the work done in the interim. I'm going to step back for a second and say the perspective I bring on this is having been involved in something very similar in the nonprofit housing area. We have a lot of housing complexes that were funded in such a way that after 20 years, the owner could pay off the mortgage early and take them from an affordable housing complex to a market rate complex. In most of the country, this didn't matter because there was no incentive for the owner to do so because they gain more money by leaving them as affordable housing. These are called project-based Section 8. However, in Oregon, because we did a number of things and built them in neighborhoods that didn't deteriorate and kept good care of them, there was a lot of incentive for the owners to do so. And the federal government had a program by which it helped nonprofits buy these complexes rather than have hundreds of families expelled and put out in the process of them going to market. So as the housing director at Human Solutions, I was involved in two of these acquisitions, and we succeeded on two of them. We saved about 120 units of affordable housing or 120 families that were not expelled. It was very hard to do, even with the federal program. And so I bring that perspective to this, that for tenants to buy a park or for a nonprofit to buy a park on behalf of tenants is very difficult. You have to have a fairly sophisticated effort with people who understand financing, have good relationships with bankers, and can put together a persuasive proposal. Furthermore, the price tends to be the seller only sells, and if the price is the same as what they're going to get on the private market. And so, consequently, the price may be so high that by the time you acquire it, you still have to charge so much for the space that the tenants may not be able to afford it. So that's the framework. It's a very hard thing to succeed in doing. My understanding is about the only place in the country that this has succeeded is in Vermont. And in Vermont, I believe about 30 parks is what I have heard. Have changed hands in this fashion, and my understanding is that is because the rents are regulated in Vermont, and therefore the price that is to be paid is a reasonable price and not based on the highest price you can crank up on the people living there. So that's the background. These two bills say let's take a shot at creating a framework where this could work. 3694 does that by establishing a park purchase corporation that would have the power to facilitate this. 3695 says let's give the sellers a reason to look closely at this kind of sale to tenants or to a tenants an organization representing tenants. It specifically presents the concept of a long-term capital gain exemption. There is another bill floating around this building, and it is in revenue, that takes the strategy of creating an economic incentive by providing a tax credit. And I believe that bill has had one hearing in revenue, and we may hear more about it. And I don't have any particular perspective on what the best instrument is or what the right amount is, but the idea of providing sellers with an incentive to look at working out a deal with tenants or a tenants organization is well worth considering because it is going to take the seller more time and more effort in dealing with such an entity, and providing some form of incentive may make a lot of sense. If the tenants can succeed in buying the complex, the issues that they currently face would go away because they'd be more like a condo association in which they have a role in making their own rules and setting their own prices in the future. So a good concept, And these bills, or bills holding these concepts, would help facilitate that possibility here in Oregon. And I believe Mr. Schwach is here, who has a lot more detailed familiarity with the issue and with the bills.
Representative Merkley, let me ask you, would you have any objection to me opening up the hearing on House Bill 3695 at this time as well?
Absolutely none.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
And I will do that. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3695. If you would, I'll leave it up to you. If you would like to address that right now, you can, or if you would like to orchestrate it in any way you wish, that would be fine.
I think the only comments that I have about it are the ones that I've just made, that this is one potential way of getting an owner to look closely at working with the tenant's organization when he's prepared, he or she is prepared to sell the park.
Thank you very much. Fred Schwach, please.
Mr. Chair, members, while Mr. Schwach's coming up, both these bills have subsequent referrals to waive the means. And the bill that's in revenue that's similar to 3695 is House Bill 2863. What numbers are they here? 2863, that's the bill that's in revenue that has to do with the tax credit.
All right, welcome, Mr. Schwach.
Thank you, Chair Wilson, and thank you for letting me testify. Basically, the problem we've seen around the state and the country is, I'm sure you're all familiar with a 1031 exchange as far as the tax code is concerned. Our biggest problem is because the seller has to identify a leg up within 45 days and close within 180 days, it's impossible for a tenant's organization to come up with the money that quickly. So essentially, if this if the bill on setting up a public corporation was put into place, that corporation could, in my opinion, provide bridge financing so that you could close quickly and then allow the residents a longer time to get their ducks in order to buy the park. That's one thing I could see that this bill could accomplish. The other thing I was thinking about is if the state bought a park such as the one we live in, and the reason I'm mentioning it is it's a nice park full of elderly people, the state could recover its investment, charging just enough to repay the loan plus interest, and I doubt if you could build 114 low-cost housing units for $4 million, and that's what our park is up for. So it appears to me like it would be a win-win for the state to create such a corporation.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, Mr. Schwach, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. The next to testify will be Cheryl Pellegrini, Department of Justice, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cheryl Pellegrini, and I'm with the Department of Justice. As the committee has previously heard, these bills were introduced after the Attorney General convened a task force to look into the manufactured housing industry in general. While I believe that both Representative Merkley and Mr. Schwach have outlined the bills in terms of what they do, I can tell you a little bit just about how each works from a technical aspect. 3695 would provide to a, let me get the right one in front of me. It would provide an exemption to a person who sold a manufactured housing park to either a nonprofit corporation such as that contemplated by House Bill 3694, or any legal entity consisting of or including a majority of the tenants who reside in the park at the time of sale. And the Oregon taxes on the capital gain and the sale of the park, it's currently taxed at the rate of 9%. The parallel bill introduced by Representative Carlson would create a tax credit in the amount of 9% of the sales price. And in looking at the two bills, both provide the desired incentive to the seller of a manufactured housing park. It may be, in fact, that a tax credit could be more advantageous to a seller than a tax exemption, for the purpose that a tax credit would allow the seller to offset any taxes owing on the income from all sources, as opposed to just those taxes that would be owed on the sale of the specific item. And also, I think that House Bill 2683 allows the seller to carry the tax credit forward for a period of 5 years. That's about all the information that I have on that. On 3694, we heard in the course of the task force that groups of tenants have unsuccessfully tried to purchase manufactured home parks in which they live 44 times in recent history. And out of that, two were successful, and I believe those were the two that Representative Merkley mentioned. At present, as you've also heard, there's virtually no incentive for park owners to sell to tenants as opposed to any other buyer in the market. The idea behind 3694 is, as Mr. Schwach mentioned, in that it would allow tenants some breathing room within which they could amass the funds required to buy a manufactured housing park. By the creation of this public, it's a holding company. It would be a government entity. It would have all of the responsibilities and abilities of a public, independent public corporation, and essentially would be able to hold the park in trust for the benefit of the tenant association while the tenant association secured appropriate financing. It would then transfer ownership of the park to the tenants association. I believe that it has 36 months, that's what the bill would contemplate, within which the transaction is to take place. And that's in Section 2, Sub 3. The bill also contemplates that as a corporation, it would be able to execute contracts, sue and be sued in its own name, borrow money for the purposes of purchasing or operating the park, collect rents, and perform all duties and functions of a landlord, and assert all rights of a landlord. The task force found, and Mr. Schwach also just noted, that there are many instances in which tenants could benefit by purchasing the parks in which they live, and the Attorney General believed that both of these bills in conjunction, while it wouldn't provide all the remedies that are needed, they at least represent a good start in the right direction towards providing incentives on the part of sellers to sell, and an ability for purchasers to put themselves in a position where they can purchase the park in which they live. If the committee has any specific questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Representative Doyle.
Thank you. I guess I'm looking at the function of the corporation, the way it's reading, is that there would be general fund monies used to purchase the parks. Does that sound right? Or is it going out and getting financing some other way?
Let me look quickly.
And I look at Section 4 that says that we're appropriating general fund monies for the purposes of carrying out Sections 1 and 2, which includes purchasing the parks.
That's correct.
And then, I guess, looking on Section 2, Sub 2, the last sentence, it says, any debts incurred by the corporation or debts only of the corporation. If it's general fund money that's going to be used to purchase, I guess, can you help me kind of go through that process? Is how would general fund money be used to purchase, and then say the tenants don't end up buying it, and now we end up, you know, having to maybe sell the state or the public corporation has to sell it to somebody else at a lower price, maybe than purchase price. How would that be handled?
Chair Wilson, Representative Doyle, I'm not sure I can answer that with the information I have before me right now. I'd be happy to get the answer and bring it back to you and the committee.
I guess, do you understand the bill to be that it is where general fund money was to be used to purchase these cars?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garrard.
Hi, good afternoon. Do we have any history of the state being involved in similar type programs in the past? Have they been successful? Have they failed? Do we have any history at all?
Chair Wilson, Representative Garrard, not here. I believe that Representative Merkley said that there was, that Vermont has some experience with that, but I don't think Oregon does. So this would be a first.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Representative March.
Yeah, maybe a follow-up on that. How about in regular housing, i.e. affordable housing, has the state bought, instead of, we're talking about mobile home parks here or manufactured home parks, but we have affordable housing programs, et cetera, that are administered by the department. Do they do anything similar?
Chair Wilson, Representative March, I only wish there was someone from the housing authority here to answer that question.
So we need to have Bob Refine here. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. All right, Ms. Pellegrini, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our last individual set to testify here is Jack Sicking, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Jack Sicking. I'm with the MHCO. That's the Community Park Owners Association. And I marked down on there that I was neutral as far as 3694 is concerned. And the reason is, first of all, selfishly, you know, if I could get another buyer in the market for my mobile home park, of course, you know, why wouldn't I? You know, it just, if you have more buyers, your mobile home park is all of a sudden becomes worth more. The other thing is that the owners, the tenants have had a right, you know, to put a bid in on a mobile home park. But what has happened historically is that they've actually acted as spoilers. They've come in and they said, we want to buy. And then they tie up your property for a long time. There's one horror story that happened over the past year, had to do with an estate that took 9 months to 10 months. Before the tenants washed out, you know, so that was a really hard on the sellers. So on that point, in talking to the members of MHCO, they're guardedly in favor of this bill. There's a few points that I just heard made that I'm not in favor of, and that's the first one is, you know, really, do we need a new bureaucracy in the state? Can we afford to support, to pay for that? All I read about in the paper is how much, you know, we need the money for education and, what, you know, for the other things that are pressing. Are we actually going to take money out of the general fund in order to fund something like this? The second thing is just a question on public policy. You know, when you form a public agency and they buy housing, all of a sudden it becomes public housing. Now, I'm from New Jersey originally, and alongside of me is the state of New York and the state of Pennsylvania. And I can remember going through Philadelphia and seeing public housing. The biggest thing and the best thing that happened to that public housing is when they imploded it, and it all came crumbling down. And in Chicago, they did the same thing. You know, okay, mobile home parks maybe won't happen because the tenants do own their unit, and maybe they'll have more respect for the property. But, you know, that's something that comes in the back of my mind. The fourth thing that comes to my mind is this committee itself that's being set up. It's a six-member committee. Six members is, you're going to get a 3-3 vote. And how does the vote break? I think a five-member committee would probably be in the interest of the state. Okay, you have two owners and you have two tenants on this committee. But do you need two people from appointed by the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services? Why not just one member from him so you have a five-member board? There's obviously going to be, in anything that you do, there's going to be alliances formed, so you're going to wind up probably with a vote that can carry, but it's something to think about, I think. And the dollars that it says in here that they want to take the dollars from the general fund to operate it, I mean, you're talking about paying a staff, you're talking about buying parks, you're talking about covering the interest on these loans to start with. It's quite an undertaking that you're undertaking. It's just not a, you know, something that we ought to be rushing into. Personally, if I could get a viable buyer, my park becomes worth more. So, you know, I'm kind of at heads on what I should do here. So that's $36.94, $36.95. I think that's the way to go. I think $36.95. Back in the '80s, we were calling this supply side economics. I mean, if you create a reason for an owner to want to cooperate, and if the incentive is large enough, I think the thing could be doable and done, and it certainly could be done without a brand new bureaucracy being formed. Any questions?
Any questions?
All right, I thank you very much.
Appreciate your time. Anyone else to testify on those two bills? All right, thank you. Representative Merkley, any final thoughts from you? I'd sure give you some seat time if you would like to. We do have other bills in the hopper that relate, as you've heard, to these subjects.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any, but I believe Mr. Schwach wanted to share something with me.
Mr. Schwach, please. It's fine. We've got the time.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. Essentially, I'm, as far as coming out of the general fund, as I said earlier, I can see this as bridge financing. I wouldn't expect the state to finance these, but even if the state did and you take it out of the general fund, I think that unless you preserve somehow the affordable housing that's available in manufactured home parks, the cost of the state in providing alternative low-cost housing would be far greater than what it would cost you to maintain these parks. And when you look at another issue, and that is by the time you take income tax out of the picture, because the state wouldn't be paying income tax, and if it's a nonprofit benevolent association, property taxes go away. The profit motive goes away. Essentially, you could buy a park for considerably more than some other investor might be willing to pay for it, and it still would stabilize the rent at what the rent is today because of those other cost factors that go away as far as an ordinary investor would be concerned. So I think that it's worth looking at seriously just from the point of view of preserving affordable housing. Now, as far as the other bill with the tax deferral, as long as a 1031 exchange exists, you aren't going to see the money anyway. But this may, because a good investor will take advantage of 1031 exchange to avoid paying capital gains taxes. So. By offering him this incentive, it's kind of a wash. It isn't going to cost the state anything to offer him an incentive to sell to nonprofits.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes. I actually had a question of Representative Merkley. Representative Merkley, have you given some consideration of maybe moving, instead of establishing a separate private corporation, putting this under Bob Repine's organization, which deals with financing of affordable housing and things like that?
Mr. Chair and Representative March, I'm one step removed from this bill because I wasn't directly involved in the crafting of it. I can speculate a bit on this strategy, and there may be others here, including the Attorney General's representative, who may be able to amplify. The strategy that was used in the LIPRA acquisitions that I referred to in my testimony was to provide grants to nonprofits to basically cover their staff time. But the reason, and that worked for a couple of reasons. One is you had a very experienced organization that was in the development business undertaking the acquisition. And they had established relationships with inspectors and funders and lawyers and so forth. However, they also had, in that situation, a legal obligation which gave the nonprofit a right of first refusal or a certain time period in which to attempt to close the deal. Now, this does not provide any such power to an organization or to a nonprofit. And so you basically have to be able to move very quickly to be a competitive purchaser. So I think that is why, rather than set up a framework that assisted nonprofits in acquiring the parks, it created a separate organization that would have the ability to move quickly. Now, could that organization be within the Department of Housing and Community Services? I'm guessing that it could, and in fact, it might benefit from expertise there. My guess is that it may have been separated out to provide limited liability as provided in the language. Any debts incurred are debts only of the corporation. As you can imagine that there is, in any such acquisition, some risk. You have to negotiate shrewdly over the price and over the details of the acquisition, and you have to be very confident that you're getting your value so that if, in fact, a sale to such a special purpose nonprofit or to a tenants association doesn't occur, you can resell the market. And there, what if the market crashes during the year that you're working to make that happen? So those may have been the reasons.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Anyone else wish to testify on these before we close our public hearing? Okay, thank you. We will close our public hearing on the two bills, 3694 and 3695. I will now open a work session on the House Bill 2587. All right, we are going to be sending this to Ways and Means. This would be your...
We do have some dash one amendments from Representative Hill to change the effective date to the 2004 general election.
Okay. Representative Starr.
I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2587.
Thank you, Representative Starr. Moves the dash one amendments into House Bill 2587. Do we have any discussion? Any objection? Okay. So moved.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Starr.
I move we refer House Bill 2587 as amended to Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2587 as amended to Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just simply wanted to say that this is something whose legislation whose time has come, and it's high time that we paid attention to this, particularly in a vote by mail state, to make sure that we get rid of the punch card system and get into the 21st century, if you will.
Thank you for your comment. Further,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Devlin.
Not on subject of pushing all of my meetings on Wednesday to be this short.
Representative Devlin was expressing the wish that all his Wednesday Rules Committee meetings could be this short.
Well, and back to the rules.
Can we adopt that as a committee rule, Mr. Chair?
I would like to do that, but I think that would come back to haunt us in probably a month, at least from now. Okay, Jennifer, if you would call the roll. Oh, excuse
me. I'm sorry to prolong the meeting any longer, but the key for me in this bill is the funding of it, and to require counties to fund this without providing them money, that would give me heartburn, but if we gain the money or federal money or whatever, that's
way to go. Yes, sir. Thank you. All right, further discussion. Seeing none, Jennifer, if you would call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Boyle?
Excuse.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Burrard?
Aye.
Representative
Mark?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. And motion carries.
Pardon me?
All right. All right, we have no further business to take care of. Committee, thank you very much. We are adjourned.